I'm up on the tight wire.
I'm in the arena sitting across from my good friend, Benjamin Alira Sainz.
And I'm in the arena as well. And I'm sitting across from my good friend, Daniel Chacon.
And welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today, we have a great show. We recently went to Boston, Ben and I, for the AWP, Associated Writers Programs Conference. There were 13,000 people attending. There were so many writers, they had to close down the bars. They wouldn't let people in because, you know, writers drink a lot.
And I'm happy to report that Daniel was my roommate when we were staying in Boston, and he doesn't snore.
And we got along. We got along, yeah. And we stayed in a hotel about 3 miles from the conference site, so we would have to take the subway there. That was a really interesting experience. It was one of the most difficult train maps that I've ever encountered in any city. We had no idea where we were going the first couple of days.
And while we were there, we went to an event, the Continta event.
AWP, like I said, there were about 13,000 writers, and most of these are mainstream literary writers. Most of them are white, and AWP has, you know, always had Latinos, but the Latinos generally were ignored for the many, many, many years. So what happened is a lot of the Latinos got together and started to, I wouldn't call it an organization, I would more call it a collective of Latino writers, poets, fiction writers, memoirs. And by Latino, I mean there's Chicanos, there's Puerto Ricanos, there's Salvadoreños, I mean all
Cubanos.
All kinds of Latinos, even Hispanics, a few Hispanics even. And so they have this collective called Continta, which is where the Latinos get together and they celebrate every year a distinguished member of the Latino writing community, usually somebody from the city where the conference is. And this one was in Boston, so the celebration this year was with Tino Villanueva, who is a poet who's been around for a long time, originally from San Marcos, Texas, but he's a poet of many, 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 many books. And Ben, you were telling me that he was one of the very first writers in the United States to
write in Spanish.
To write in Spanish.
When I first started writing, I met Tino when I was at the University of Iowa many, many years ago, 25 years ago perhaps, and he was writing poetry only in Spanish. He was a well-known Chicano writer and perhaps the only one that was writing in Spanish. I don't mean code switching. I mean, he was writing in Spanish, and that was very brave of him.
Absolutely.
And it was very rare for a writer to become well-known and respected in this country that only wrote in Spanish. He's since written his books bilingually, in the sense that he writes the poem in Spanish, and then he writes, and then he translates it.
Many of his books now are in English. The one that I bought when we saw him in Boston is in English. We took our microphone, our Words on a Wire microphone equipment, and our headphones, and we looked very official. We had, you know, we looked like a film crew entering the Continta celebration, which took place in a Mexican restaurant. So what we're going to listen to now is a interview with Tino Villanueva at the Continta celebration.
The interview took place in Boston, Massachusetts.
I'm here at the Continta celebration talking to Tino Villanueva, who has been honored by the Continta celebration. Tino, you're originally from where?
I was born in San Marcos, Texas, between Austin, the
you're
capital.
You're Tejano.
Yes,
about Veras. That. Wow, yeah. Awesome.
And San Antonio, 48 miles to the south.
You've been living in Boston for how long?
Yes, indeed. I came here in August of 1971.
Wow. So when you are me, a Bostonian then.
So when you ask me how long have you been living here, I will answer as a comedian answered once. You take care of the petty arithmetic. I came here late August of 71. I graduated from Southwest Texas State in 69. With the GI Bill, with the help of the GI Bill, I was able to graduate in 3 years. Then I applied to SUNY Buffalo. And so I spent 2 years in Buffalo. And that's when I came, after I got my MA, I came to Boston late August of 1971.
What do you do in Boston?
Well, I teach at Boston University. I'm in the Department of Romance Studies.
Oh,
and wow. I teach the advanced Spanish language courses. Sometimes I teach the special courses for the heritage speakers, mm-hmm. which we used to call native speakers. And next semester, I'll be teaching a short story course. but still within the language section of the department. And at one point, I did teach one creative writing course, poetry. We sort of invented a course, and I got to teach creative writing. Students were learning how to write poems in Spanish.
Wow. So that was interesting. There's enough people in Boston to write in Spanish.
Well, yes. And Spanish is not their language.
Right.
And so this is they really were interested in writing poetry in Spanish. We not only wrote poetry. I mean, I had them read the canonical poets and try to learn from wherever. Yeah.
Okay, so I just listened to your reading, and it was amazing.
Oh, thank
you. But you have a new book. It's called So Spoke Penelope.
Right.
And in this book, you really use a lot of classical, traditional literature. And tell me what that means to you as a Chicano writer.
Correct. One of my books, the previous one, has to do with memory. One thing, I don't know where this came to me when I was at Southwest Texas, that I didn't want to be pigeonholed and be only known for writing one particular type of poetry.
Oh, absolutely.
So in my first book, you have poems on death, you have poems from the, let's say, the Chicano reality, there are poems on nature. And in my second book, same thing. You know, I have some haikus, I have some tankas, I have a section on love poetry, on death, as I said, psychological death or actual physical death. Then I did a book of poems on childhood, which is a chronicle of my worst years, which was done in Spanish, Crónica de Mis Años Peores. Then I did Scene from the Movie Giant, which is a different theme. And now I did So Spoke Penelope. Which is, yes, as you say, a classical theme. Right. And I think she's just a fascinating figure. When I get that question, well, how did you get interested? Well, she's just a fascinating figure from a canonical work of Western literature.
And you know what I've always thought, Tino? You know, I always thought that you could take any classic Greek drama and find a Mexican family that fits that.
Correct, because we're all human.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the human experience is universal. You know, we all dream, we all have our downfalls, we all love, we all hope, we wait, just as Penelope does.
Right.
And then you get frustrated, you get rejected. I mean, all of those are universal themes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. In her case, of course, as I said in the reading, Homer doesn't tell us enough about her weaving. I present her as an artist as well in some of the poems. She was a weaver. She was a worker in wool.
Wow.
And so that's the part that I wanted to bring out. And you don't find that in the Odyssey. So it was interesting for me because I felt that I was filling in what Homer didn't include.
Right. And you know, it's not a mistake that it's Homer. He's a Homer boy, just like us.
Yeah, he's a Homer boy, I'm a homeboy.
All right, thank you. We're talking to Tino Villanueva right here at the Contito Celebration at the Socolo Restaurant in Boston, Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Tino.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
We're back, and then what we did after we talked to Tino?
Afterwards, we interviewed the following authors.
Fred Arroyo, who is the author of Western Avenue and Other Fictions. We've had him on the show. Melinda Palacio, who is the author of Ocotillo Dreams. We've also had her on the show. TMZ Hernandez. Sergio Troncoso, El Paso native, author also of several books. Aaron Morales, who is the author of Drowning Tucson. And we had two Franciscos, Francisco Aragon and Francisco Alarcón, both of them poets. And so let's listen to the interviews.
And we start off our interview with Fred Arroyo.
So, Fred.
Yes.
What do you think our contribution is to American letters right now and our future in the consciousness of American letters and American literary culture?
I think we're part of a long tradition that did not have the kinds of opportunities and spaces that we have now. They had a strong voice, but they didn't have avenues for that voice. Whereas now we are growing more as a community, but we have more spaces to express ourselves, and we are part of the country as it's changing. I think we still have to work on that on the political level, but I think on the lower levels of art and writing, and it's shifting towards education somewhat, but we still need to make much greater inroads into education. But I think we're part of what the next century will be, because our stories are going to be more, if not in the larger consciousness of America, it is in the larger consciousness of younger Latinos and Latinas who are interested in like the power of words and stories.
I think that's exactly right. I think that's exactly right.
Thank you, Fred Arroyo, author of Western Avenue and Other Fictions. Tim Z, can you tell us about your new book? It's coming out.
Oh, yeah. It's about B. Franco, Jack Kerouac's Mexican Girl, The Mexican Girl. It took place in 1947. And, yeah, it's going to be coming out in the fall. It's a you know, fiction novel, mostly historical fiction. But it really tells her relationship with Kerouac in the 15 days they were together, but from her point of view.
And if I can tell a personal story about this, one time we were at the Latino Book Festival in Los Angeles, and I was driving you guys around. He says, hey, let's go to East L.A. You want to look something up? And you looked up her house, and we parked right in front of it and took some pictures.
Yeah, and actually the pictures we took on that day, you and I were there, I showed, those are the ones I actually showed her for the first time, and she saw it, and she goes, that's my sister's house.
And we're talking to Sergio Troncoso. He's an El Paso writer with two recent books, This Wicked Patch of Dust, and what is the name of your collection of essays?
Crossing Borders, Personal Essays.
And then you also have an anthology coming out.
Yeah, Our Lost Border, Essays of Life Amid the Narco Violence. The interesting thing about this anthology is it really is an anthology representing both sides of the border. We have great Mexican writers like Lolita Bosch. Diego Osorno has won a lot of the major Mexican prizes in journalism. And then we also have people like Jose Skinner and then Jose Antonio Rodriguez, who just won the Penn Texas Award for Poetry. He has an essay in that. And they're all writing about how family culture has been changed by the violence, some from trivial things to very essential things. Because the border, as you know, Daniel, has created this unique philosophical space where you can live in between languages, live in between cultures, where you can undermine the absolutists on both sides of the border. And I think that's what we wanted to capture and what has been lost. And I hope now that the violence is ebbing, that people, you know, will be able to cross again. Because for me, for example, the panel that I talked about said that how do you translate your culture to your kids? One of the issues is I couldn't take my kids to Juarez so that I understand them. So you have to do it in other ways. You know,
that sounds like a great anthology. When's it coming out?
March 30th.
30th. Okay, yeah. We'll look out for that. Thank
and
you,
so
Sergio.
I hope people like it. It's the Mexican writers are in Spanish and English, and the American writers are in English.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Sergio.
Thank you, Daniel.
And we also have with us Melinda Palacio, who's been on our show twice because she had two books come out in 1 year. Melinda, tell us about your experience at AWP. Why are you here in Boston?
Well, it's been a whirlwind tour here, but I'm here with Luis Rodriguez, Luibet Restro, promoting Tia Chucha books.
Your collection of poems with Tia Chucha.
Yeah, How Fire is a Story Waiting is a Tia Chucha press
book. Or like I like to say it, How Fire is a Story Waiting.
Yes.
Yes. Well, thank you for joining us, Melinda. And it's good to see you here in Boston.
Oh, wonderful seeing you guys.
Another writer with us tonight is Aaron Michael Morales. He is the author of Drowning Tucson from Coffee House Press. He's here at AWP. Aaron, I want you to tell us about the book you're working on.
Well, I finished writing Eat Your Children, and I'm rewriting it because I don't think it's appropriately done yet. So many things have happened since I started writing that book, right? The Miami bath salts, zombie guy. Like, a lot of weird stuff has happened that, had my book been done 3 years ago, would have been fine. But in light of reality and drugs and the kind of addictions that people have, I don't think my book was representing that properly. So I'm actually going back and rewriting a lot of it. But I'm happy with it. I think it's going to be good.
So what compelled you to write this novel?
Moving to Terre Haute, Indiana, where I live now, compelled me to, because I lived in a really poor neighborhood when I first moved there. I was heavily in debt with credit card debt, so I bought a house that cost less than a car. And I was surrounded by children whose parents were meth heads. And I mean like intense meth heads, like committed. And all I could think was how doomed they were, so I decided to start writing that book. But things change so rapidly, right? I want the book to be timely enough that it doesn't seem like a bad episode of Breaking Bad Season 1, right?
Exactly, because...
a lot has happened since then.
Because we have all, our books have to always be in dialogue with what is happening in the culture right now.
Right, right. And so even though Drowning Tucson was set in the 80s, it's still very relevant to now, because you can trace it back to that. But the meth thing is weird. It shifts and moves and morphs in weird ways really quickly. So I'm happier with it. We'll see. Hopefully it'll be out very soon.
So we've been talking to Aaron Michael Morales here at AWP, author of Drowning Tucson, talking about the book he's working on, Eat Your Children. Thank you, Aaron.
We're here in Boston, AWP, talking to Francisco X. Alarcón. Yes. So tell me, what are you working on these days?
Well, you know, I'm doing an anthology for University of Arizona Press. This is an anthology in response to SB 1070. And so we're basically, you know, it's a response to what's going on in America. Xenophobia, the idea that, you know, somehow poetry has to respond to politics. And we're doing that.
Awesome.
And actually, you know, it's going to come out. We plan to have at least about 52 writers, you know, transgenerational, established and also emerging poets. And I also have another book coming out, University of Arizona Press.
Another one. What is this, like the 50th book for you, Francisco X. Alarcón?
This is called Canto Hondo.
Canto Hondo. Oh,
Canto
just
Hondo.
Just like the Lorca.
Yeah, but this is
awesome.
He was Cante Hondo.
Right, right. Mine
is Canto Hondo.
Nice.
Because I believe that we have become the other in America.
Oh, yeah.
And the same thing that, you know, gypsies were in Spain. They were despised. They were spit on. There we are now.
Absolutely.
The native people of this continent, you know, we are the other. And so this is basically reclaiming and using Lorca in a subversive way.
Right, right. So let me ask you something. You have been involved with the Chicano writing community for many, many years. I mean, you are one of the veteranos. What is the difference between the Chicano representation at AWP now and what it was maybe 10 years ago?
It's a big difference. I think it's a critical difference. I actually stopped going to AWP after we had a big reading. It was the first reading that we did in New Orleans. Believe it or not,
I remember that one, yeah.
1992. It was Gay Latino. Coral was there. Francisco Aragon was there. Rigoberto
González
was there. Also, Ron Arroyo was there too. And myself. And we had a full house of the first time that gay Latinos did a public reading at AWP.
Wow.
And then I stopped because somehow I didn't feel that we had a critical mass. I've been back now. This is the third time. I was in Washington, D.C. and Chicago. And now I think I really believe that we have a critical mass of people that are involved in writing, a new generation of people. So I'm very happy. I'm very happy, and I'm glad, you know, people like Francisco. Francisco is one of those people that do a lot of work that they don't get acknowledged. But actually, in this frame of literary, you know, literary framework, the people that have to do the work, this guy has done a lot of work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He is on the board of AWP,
well,
right?
He just stepped off. That's why I got involved again. And that's to me, all this is going on is part of that. And I think it's important for us, it's important for a lot of Latino writers to really get involved. Benjamin has been around too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for a long time.
Oh,
you know?
I met Francisco when I was at Stanford with Tony Burciaga. We had a writing group.
That's right.
Was Lucha Corpi involved?
Yes. And Lucha Corpi.
That's right.
Bernice.
Juan Felipe Herrera.
Juan Felipe Herrera.
Gary Soto. Lorna Di Cervantes.
Oh my God, that sounds like a great
I have
group.
A picture of all of us on my desk. And of all of us. We were at Gary Soto's house.
That's right.
And you know what? I keep thinking, like, I probably have the only copy of this picture. And Rose Katakalos was there as well. And I probably have the only picture of this. And I could scan it and share it with the world. But I'm thinking, like, I'm so selfish, but I should.
Because
that was a long time ago,
you know?
And all of us have come such a long way,
you know,
and it's such a special picture, and I have it on my desk when I write every day, and I look at it every day,
special. The lesson is this. We were doing this 30 years ago, and now Pachanga con Tinta is doing this now. So things like this are very important because that's how you connect to another person. The one-to-one basis, you know, like have an argument. I remember we had an argument with Gary Soto, that meeting. I still remember.
Hey, dude, we did.
You know, we did. I said, you know, how dare you, Gary Soto, come to us and tell us not to do books for children? How dare you do this? And he did. He did. You know, he did a whole number on us that night.
That's right.
But we were able to basically go, Gary, you know, you can be Gary, but we're going to do it, and we did
awesome,
it.
Awesome. But
so
we,
it's important to have arguments.
But I remember that day when we got together at Gary's house, and it was because no matter what our differences were,
yes,
we really felt that we had, that the fight was ours.
It was us.
And that we were a community,
yes,
no matter our differences. Yes. And that, as Benjamin Franklin once said, we must assuredly hang together or we shall all hang separately.
See, that's a lesson. Because, you know, a lot of people, really, part of that generation, you know, we had a writer center called the Chicano Latino Writer Center. Who were there? You know, Cheri Moraga was part of that. Sandra Cisneros was part of that. Wow. Ana Castillo was part of that. You know, and we had arguments, and we disagreed to agree, you know, and agreed to disagree. And I think it is important. This is what life is. You have to engage. You cannot be just detached and not even get involved. So for me to come to this conference, I see this as maybe the most important panel because I'm able to connect with a lot of people in a one-to-one basis. Like tonight, the thing that the high point for me is to connect with Lori Guerrero.
Oh, absolutely. Lorianne Guerrero, who just won the Andrés Montoya Poetry Prize.
I never met her
absolutely
in person. And so when she was telling me from her heart how she felt when I called her up, and she was in that classroom when she got a phone call, and I called her up.
Were you the judge? Awesome. Oh, no way.
I talked to Francisco.
That is so significant. You were the
judge? I talked to Francisco, and I said to Francisco, I read the whole bag that you sent me, 40 manuscripts. I have it now. So what should I do? And he said, call her up. At 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, I pick up my phone, dial her number. She picked up the number, and I said, this is Francisco Alarcón. And she goes, okay, you won the Montoya Literary Prize. I'm the judge, and I'm blessed that you won. And then she's like, it started crying. And what happened, the students were there, and they listened to what I was saying, and they started applauding her. So for me, it was the lesson of life. Her work is not just an individual. Her, you know, she's a medium for a lot of consciousness.
Absolutely.
And so the children applauding, it was part of that.
And we're going to try to get her over here. Is Lorianne Guerrero around?
Here she
comes right now, Lorianne Guerrero.
Lorianne, I was telling them
about... We're talking to Francisco,
you know, about how I call you up.
You tell
about
us about
the phone call? I'm at Palo Alto College in Southside of San Antonio, where I was teaching at the time. I'm in my creative writing class, and the phone rings, and I'm pissed. Who left their phone on? Somebody, turn off your phone. Turn off your phone, and they're like, miss, it's your purse is ringing. I was taking care of my grandpa, so I was like, oh, it's grandpa, so I'm going through my bag, and I get my phone, I don't recognize the number. So I answer the phone, and I hear Francisco's voice. Because I'd been YouTubing all year. Like, I know his voice. I can't even say exactly what he said. I don't remember, but I recognize his voice, and my knees buckled a little bit. And my students said, oh my God, it's her grandpa.
Oh, no way.
They were like, it's her grandpa. And tears are streaming down my face, and I'm on the phone, in front of my class, on the phone. And they're like, it's her grandpa, and I'm shaking my head, no, no, no. And they also knew that I was waiting to see if I had won this prize or not. I knew I was a finalist. So a girl in the back of the class says, oh my God, she won. And I nod my head yes, and my class roars in celebration.
Are you leaving?
And it was such a great moment that I was able to share with my class. They were there when I found out that I won this prize.
And I listened to the applauding, and to me, it was a confirmation of what I'd done. Because her poetry is that.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's a collective consciousness through the individual. It's lyrical, but yet concerned about the other. And by having her, you know, her students applauding, you know, like going, I hear,
I go. But remember, when you get a phone call and you don't recognize the number, it could either
it could mean
one of two things. You didn't pay your credit card.
Exactly.
Or you just won an award.
Don't think that didn't go through my head. I was like, damn it, David, what bill didn't you pay? Because that totally
Sweet.
Went through my head. Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, so let's talk a little bit to Francisco Aragon, who is a former AWP board member. And you're one of the organizers of Continta. Most of our audience doesn't know what Continta is. Can you explain it?
Letras Latinas is a co-sponsor of tonight's event, but Continta was a group.
What is Letras Latinas?
So Letras Latinas is the literary program of the Institute for Latino Studies at the University of Notre Dame, and we oversee a number of initiatives such as the Andres Montoya Poetry Prize, as we just heard from Lori.
Lori Ann Guerrero is the most recent winner of that.
And this year, we just inaugurated a new poetry prize called the Letras Latinas Red Hen Poetry Prize, won by the Cuban-American poet Dan Vera, chosen by
Which Orlando. Is a second book of poems?
It's a prize that supports the publication of a second or third book.
Okay, excellent.
And the winning book just got, it's making its debut at this conference, the same as Laurie's book.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah.
And let me say that everyone we have been speaking to not only is really committed to their craft and to their discipline and to their writing, but they have all been incredibly committed to building community, not only a literary community, but a cultural community and a political community, because I think all of the people we've been hearing from tonight, we are grateful, and we want to give back to the people who gave us our words. They gave us English, they gave us Spanish, and we say thank you, and we give to you. We give back to you the words you gave to us.
We've been listening to interviews that Daniel and I did in Boston, Massachusetts, at the AWP conference. Specifically, this one was from the Continta celebrations.
And all the Latinos were there, and it was a lot of fun.
In the future, we will be airing more shows with our interviews with authors from around the country that attended the Associated Writers Program conference in Boston, Massachusetts, where there was over 13,000 writers there.
If you're going to be around El Paso on April 6th, which is a Saturday, Bobby Bird will be reading from his new book, Talking to My Wife While She's Away at Church, at the Richard Burgess Regional Library, 3 p.m. Saturday, April 6th, at the Richard Burgess Library at 9600 Dyer Street in El Paso, Texas. And we'll be talking to Bobby Bird in a few weeks.
Yes, we will.
So join us.
This has been Words on a Wire. This is Benjamin Alida Sainz.
And I'm Daniel Chacon. And don't forget,
the next book you read
could save your life.
I'm up on a tie wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a surge.